The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, we have made it to County Tyrone. The red carpet has well and truly been rolled out to the point where Enda McGinley has actually snuck us into a pub that was not meant to be open, and we've been fed and watered. Enda, first things first, thank you very much for that.
Not a problem. Good old Taylor's house, Emmett Quinn here, made us feel very welcome. So, I didn't realise he wasn't open, the good old COVID changing hours of establishments and their opening time. So, but we're well fed and watered and good to go now.
And Declan, you have been introducing me to every soul in this part of the county. Everyone is absolutely buzzing for this, and also much appreciated for your work for me, I think, this week.
Not at all. People are only too glad to chat. I'm sure a good bit of excitement and all the rest, and it's just only getting all those stories. People are going to see them, and I hope they enjoy them. You know, that's our judgment now that we think it's good. Like, so it remains to be seen.
Just one second. Yeah, all good. So that buzz that you mentioned there, Declan, how does it differ from previous years in Tyrone, let's say 2018?
That's a good one. And I don't know if I'd be entirely right in saying there was a massive buzz in 2018. I think there was a wee bit of excitement, all right. But if you look at the matchup, like, you know, Tyrone came in, and that was the first year of the Super 8, so that was a novelty. They'd beaten Donegal up in Ballybofey, which was the first time that had happened since, I think, 1972 or whatever. They had a bench. There was similarities in some ways. Kieran McGeary was coming off the bench. Harry Loughran was another one was coming off the bench at the time. Like, so the last 20 minutes had a great sort of arsenal to unload at the time. But I think, though, just because they played Dublin and Omagh, and they really, I think they went after that game, and they narrowed the pitch, of course, too, for Stephen Cluxton's kickouts. They did every trick.
Allegedly.
Uh-huh. So you're narrowing the pitch for the kickouts, as you said, as Emma said, and you throw everything at that one game in Omagh to try and get that, but they didn't. They didn't win that game. And I think then once they were in a final against Dublin, there was a little bit of a thought, it's great to be back in an All-Ireland final, but I'm not sure, I'd say the most rabid Tyrone fans, that they truly believe they're going to win.
I don't think the buzz was the same, but I would put that, the primary thing I would nearly put that down, we beat Monaghan in the semi-final in 2018, wasn't it, in Croke? And for Tyrone to get over Monaghan, that's something we'd done regularly, that didn't really, wasn't a famous victory, it wasn't a famous performance. Going back to previous years when we won it, like 2003, obviously it was the victory against Kerry that just put rocket fuel in the county. And it is so similar this time around. Like, the victory against Kerry this time, the way that match was set up, with Kerry so strong favourites and our boys never really showing what they showed against Kerry, like the way they played was massive. And that alone, it has the pride people felt walking away from Croke Park, just the way the boys had played, the way they'd represented the county. And even you can sense it again, just there's something about Tyrone. And when Tyrone are at their best, that's what you want to say. And it's not necessarily about brilliant football, but whenever Tyrone can play with that edge and play with that real passion, I think that's our A game. And we brought it massively against Kerry. And with that, I think the thing is ignited. Like, the difference after the Ulster final, there was no huge excitement after the Ulster final. Then you put the two things hand in hand. Dublin going out obviously has lifted every county, not just the ones remaining in the competition, but even every county outside of that. So everybody's that wee bit more excited. Then to take down Kerry, I think that has finished the deal for Tyrone, and there is a massive, massive buzz now with the team.
How did you guys manage to tap into that buzz in a positive way in the 2000s?
I suppose in 2000 we were, again, and this would be my both issue with our own team, the team that I was part of, in terms of the noughties and where we failed, and yet it was also our greatest calling card, was we loved playing on the edge. We loved playing when the deck seemed stacked against us. We loved playing when there was a point to prove, when there was doubts there, and each of our All-Irelands that was characterised by that sort of story underlying it. Then we lost. That was a great team, and yet we lost plenty of All-Irelands to teams that were not particularly great teams. They were. We lost. We went out of the championship to Laois, to Mayo, who weren't a big team at that stage. Meath we lost as well. You know, so that team, whenever we didn't have that, we were bang ordinary. And unfortunately, the real top teams, the likes of what Dublin have done, and even I looked at that Kerry team too, they were more able to be there all of the time. And yet we needed this special thing for us to really reach the pitch of our game. Now, what I would say is whenever we really reached the pitch of our game, we were the best team. There was nobody could touch us. But my problem is the really top teams can play with a level of consistency and don't have to have that real backs against the wall mentality. But it works. And it worked brilliantly in the semi-final against Kerry. And the boys got that edge. And I suppose the challenge for Tyrone as a county in the future, please God, if we can add All-Irelands, is become more mature and be able to reach a high playing level without that same chip on the shoulder thing. But when it's there and it's working, we'll play with it for another while.
Absolutely. When you talk about the deck being stacked, Declan, it seems that if you look at the bookmakers and the Mayo media, it's stacked in Mayo's favour this weekend. So when you're looking through some of the sports pages in Tyrone over the past couple of days, do they disagree with that?
Well, there's always going to be a partisan, you know, leaning for your own readership. That's just a given. Like, but even, you know, what they've done here in some of the papers have been kind of clever here. Like, this is the Ulster Herald. They have good... pretty big supplement here, but I'm not sure whether I saw it in this or in another newspaper, but it was, they've gone and got national journalists to do their predictions. So they've kind of, like I'm looking here and there's a lot of good content, there's a lot of good features, right? There's your Mayo features and Tyrone features and one in the back room there. But they've gone and got Michael Foley from the Sunday Times, John Fogarty from the Examiner and Dermot Crowe from the Sunday Independent to give their verdict. Which I think is kind of clever because yeah. There's only so many times you can say Tyrone are going to win and come on Tyrone and so on. But Michael Foley gives it to Mayo, Fogarty gives it to Mayo and Dermot Crowe gives it to Tyrone. So we're never ever going to mention those predictions again, are we? no matter what happens. But yeah, look, if you were to look through it, it's all sort of nostalgia. There's a big Art, you know, McCrory interview. It's ads from their own club wishing the players well. It is. It's get behind the boys' time, like, and that's what a local newspaper should be like. No one's buying the local newspaper to read a sort of a critique on how Tyrone might feel like that. Would just kill the buzz completely, like, you know, because there's been enough opportunity for. There's enough media out there, and I think that. In these times now that newspapers have clearly been struggling, especially during the pandemic and all that, that an awful lot of local newspapers went out of business. Like, it was pretty awful what happened, a great deal of them. And if you want that critical analysis, you want to get into the nuts and bolts and matchups and motivational tools and all that, you've got a million podcasts now. Everyone with a dictaphone in their bedroom has a podcast and is even on the odd one. And the point of this is it's cheerleading. And that's good. I think it's healthy and it creates excitement. And I mean, and this is kind of a really odd thing for anyone to say, but I can still remember the county final previews in the Fermanagh Herald when I was a child. And I can remember what they wrote about certain players. Like, so I remember Devenish played Rosslea, whether it be 1991 or 1990. And Mark Gallagher was the big young thing, you know. He was about 18, 19, breaking on the Fermanagh team. And I remember that the pen pick said that he was the baby of the team. And he used to wear these white short ankle socks long before, you know, anyone was into it. And because now we've got Irish Newspaper Archive, you can look back over all the old newspapers. And I looked at it there a few months ago. There it was. It was actually word for word as I remembered it. Now, I accept that I might have been a complete nerd, but I think that there's plenty of nerds out there in Tyrone that will lift these newspapers, read them, and they'll be drawn into this wonderful world.
Yeah, I think the mementos too. Like, you sort of gather up stuff. I've a bag at home where I've just also... I'll never look at it. I don't intend looking at it for 20, 30, 40 years. But it captures a real moment in time. And I think these... Look, life's life, but when you get these special moments where there's this whole collective buzz about the place and everybody's talking about only one topic, it's a brilliant time, and given the past year and a half and the dreary sort of news cycle we've had and what's been cancelled and what can't happen and the problems with anything that is happening, it just feels brilliant to be able to get carried away. And I think even for me, I suppose it's the difference. This is sort of the first one that I've really felt truly as a supporter. You just feel completely free of everything and you're just allowing yourself to get carried away in it. And the fact that it's such a 50-50 game, and there's no point trying to be super clever about this match. Nobody knows what's going to happen. This is going to be mayhem within the four lines of a football pitch, and I think it's just all the more exciting for it. I think both sets of supporters, whenever they rack up in Dublin on Saturday, I think the buzz will be just massive.
Yeah, absolutely. But
what about even, and your children are a bit more further on than mine. Like, you know, I mean, what does it mean to them? Like, you have your memories in 1989, so on. Like, so what do you think, what kind of fire is that igniting in them?
We were listening to a podcast on the road yesterday, coming down the road after collecting tickets up the road. It was just everyone's revolving around football. And James was beside me. He's my oldest boy. He's 10. And we're listening to actually the Paddy and Andy podcast in the car. And by the end of it, like, it was just clear. It was completely 50-50. And bar Andy putting out more advertisement for the fact that he wants a job role next year.
Is there a vacancy in the Antrim setup, do you think?
Well, I think
Kate could have him with Fermanagh.
Absolutely. Well, I think you have to go through Paddy's wife, or Andy's wife, by the sounds of it. But no, at the end of the pod, it was just so 50-50. And James, you know, he turned to me and he just said, I've never been to a match in my life where it's been so close. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And of course, that's the naivety of youth. But we were in holidays in Mayo over the summer too. And we're in Supermax in Castlebar. I was eating a salad, the mean salad in Supermax.
Sitting in Supermax Castlebar, and two fish and chips there.
It was just wall to wall. Every wall was covered with huge murals of just nothing but Mayo. And I remember I'd been talking to James about Mayo and everyone else down on, and we'd listen to Green and Red and Mayo because we're at Clew Bay and all the rest. So I was going through all of that with him. And he was sitting in Supermax and I says, Mayo are really mad about their football, aren't they? I said, yep. And so it turns out we're now playing them. So, you know, it's brilliant for them. It's brilliant for them to hear the story. They're all going in. They've Trone Day tomorrow in their schools. There's great buzz. So that lights a wee fire. It is part of what we're all about. You remember those childhood memories as much as you remember a Christmas or a special summer holiday. You remember a special moment for this. So as a parent, to be able to see the children go through that and live that, and with the way the Trone team played the last day and the way the Mayo team went about the business, you couldn't ask for better values in terms of a football team, that it was about effort, that it was them overcoming the favourites through sheer sort of force of will and desire and the teamwork and everything. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned, but obviously the tears will fall all the harder if Trone don't get over the line on Saturday.
Of course. What was that moment for you then in your childhood?
Mayo, actually, 1989. I was 8 at the time. We were on our way down to a family holiday. I think it was in Arklow, and we stopped then in Dublin for the Ireland semi, Trone v Mayo. And Trone lost that game. I was in the upper deck of the Cusick stand, the old Cusick stand. And I remember just crying, as you do when you're that age, crying after the match that Trone lost, and thought it was the most unfair thing ever. And that was that. But the rest of the family obviously were a wee bit older and a wee bit wiser, and it was still great, you know, to be down there and at it and all, but it was just the heartbreak of it. But that's the children, and for them, they've been used to Dublin. They were at the All-Ireland final in Dublin, and that, you know, it was just such a disappointing day. But this one just feels different. There feels like such a real chance, and they can easily pick up the excitement of all the adults too, you know. So no, it's brilliant.
What's your earliest sort of moment of like, I'm not sure, do you have an All-Ireland as a neutral in Croke Park or anything like that?
No, there literally is nothing like that. I'm not one of the big day merchants or the event junkies, like, but it, I suppose if your question is sort of what ignites your sort of passion for GM, it's going to be entirely different than most, and that is just where we grew up in the country. There was our primary school was next door, as in like 250 yards down the road, and that's where my mother used to coach the local Camogie club, St Matthews, and, like, you know, her parents would have been like chair people and so on, and that, and the championship in Fermanagh was the O'Connor Cup was the name. So like, that is your earliest memories of for me in the GAA, and like the area where we're from is actually, there was a great deal of, well, it's the only sort of hurling area, like, but then I had an uncle who played for Enniskillen Gaels and captained them to the championship in 87, and I had another uncle on the Bogue side that played for Tampa and was always handy for a wee slippy goal and stand around for the rest of the game then. But he always got that goal every game, so it kept him on week on week on week. So, and you know, he used to lift me with the old brown leather, you know, the old brown leather kit bag with a towel, and you know, in a Sunday best coming from mass after getting the feet of spuds.
You know, I don't remember that type of stuff.
But so that's, you know, I got to say, when it came to big days out, like, all I remember, like, standing in an old wet bank in Irvinstown and watching a bit of a melee, lads from Brookborough fighting lads from Katie during a Fermanagh Armagh game. I remember being in the athletic grounds the day that Fermanagh were about 9 points up with literally 5 minutes to go, and Dennis Hollywood got two goals and one of the Grimleys got another goal. And I remember walking out of that gate, and I clearly can recall, like, not thank me for saying it, but Colin Bradley, and he was bawling, crying, like, you know, about the unfairness and the unjustness of this. Raymond Gallagher was a minor and had played the previous week for the minors and made a senior debut then that day and hit maybe 1-5. And so there was no, there were no, oh my God, you know, I'm in this big stadium and it's a massive game. It was just an accumulation of tiny little hurts, you know, and disappointments. And it stood me in good stead for watching for the rest of the time, really.
Can I ask then, what's like this sort of week like for you? Because like, I smuggled in a copy of the Mayo News to County Tyrone, and you're in the Mayo News, you're in a couple of other publications. I'd imagine
other decent journalists are available, like, you know,
but just not in demand.
All Ireland final week is not just about the players. Like, it turns out that other people have to be at the very peak of their condition on a week like this.
I know. I've been doing a lot of planking recently. Now we're getting ready for this. But I suppose some people might feel, because you're in the county, you've got a measure of insight, like, and you know, thankfully you don't get labelled with the, oh, he's a Tyrone journalist, like, you know, he's just someone who is there and having these conversations, whatever. You know, I mean, this is just one of those things. It's great to be part of it because it's great to see it close up. And like, you know, we've got children and God love them. I can't imagine them tomorrow at the Tyrone party wearing their Fermanagh gear. Like, you know, it's going to be very tough for them. But this is what you teach them, resilience, don't you?
So that's true. Your kids wear Fermanagh gear?
No, they'll not get away with it tomorrow. Like, it's just going to have to live in Rome, like, you know. And there was there in the house the other day, and he saw that there was a Tyrone flag flying. Like, so it's for the kids. It's for the kids, you know.
For people who don't know, Declan has obviously moved to Tyrone in the last 10 years or so. We'll get into the match in just a moment, but I was saying to you off air that it's actually quite noticeable when you're driving. So I came from Mayo this morning, that there are certain towns in Tyrone that are completely absent of colour and certain towns in Tyrone that are absolutely full to the brim with colour. So how have things changed, or are they still the same when it comes to crossing the divide in the community in Tyrone, when it comes to sparking interest in this year's All-Ireland final?
Look, the political question up here, like, it's always going to be buried very, very deep. It's always there. So on times like this, it does come out. But as ever, sport is an easier vehicle. It's not a political thing up there, although some will try and associate the GAA with a very political ethos. But so for us, it is very much a very positive expression. There will be those towns that will not be put up. Simply because there may be more the unionist outlook and wouldn't be as much into the GA. But I know of many people of a unionist background, and they'll be watching this match and they'll be fully aware. They'll obviously be fully aware that it's going on, and they'll be able to hold a firm conversation. There will be plenty. We'll be sneaking out tickets here and there as well, and trying to get down as well. So look, are things moving on massively? Like, the North thing, things move very, very slowly, particularly on a political thing, and people hold dear to everything that they're about, and no less in terms of our side. And the GAA obviously is exceptionally precious and is maybe even more deeply ingrained. So moments like this, to compete for an All-Ireland final or compete for an All-Ireland title, which for so long, not so long ago, just was a very, very rare and secondary occurrence. It's brilliant, but those differences are there. But things are gradually changing in Tyrone in particular. Like, it's a fairly, it's certainly holding the balance of power, shall we say, in terms of the GAA side of things.
But because it's rare too, then what happens is, you know, because the rare stories are wonderful. And I can remember when Fermanagh reached the Ulster final in 2008 in Tempo. They had Orange Mounting up because the Orange March was taking place that year, if I'm not mistaken. But The arrangement was then with someone from the local Orange Lodge that when Fermanagh got to the final, that you know the Orange people would have their parade, but then they would take their bunting down. But at the same time as they're taking their bunting down, they're using a cherry picker, and they're punting Fermanagh bunting up. Then so they were untying your red, white, and blue streamers and whatever else, and tying on green and white at the same time. Two boys sharing a cherry picker. And what, you know, going back even further than that, like you went down one Ulster titles in hurling, like, and I remember just reading that, having a wee look over the Revolution years again, because their former manager Sean McGuinness there passed away last week, and there was a brilliant yarn where the Lord Provost of Down sent a letter congratulating Down hurlers and said, like, I particularly admire, I think it might have been Kieran McGeehan's father, like, you know, or one of the players, and I say, and the line was, I used to see him trying to steal pheasants on my property as a child. You know, it was in the actual documentation. But I know, like, what Anna says is right, like, it does move slow, but if you take, for example, the time that the Moy won the All-Ireland Intermediate, was it 2017 against them, and Gaeltacht in the final, like, you know, they had a number of Protestants that were part of their panel, like, you know, even our old local club there in Atnacloy-Ahaloo, there are a number of different people with different religions, and a lot of them had none whatsoever too, and that can't be forgotten. Like, some lads would be fairly stranger to an aisle in the church or a basket, I can tell you. But, you know, what you find is the more exposure that people get to GA, and what it actually is, like, rather than, you know, the aims and the ethos and point 1, point 2 about the United Ireland part, right? If you took that out of the rule book, it's my firm conviction that nobody would truly care. It wouldn't affect anybody, but it would do an awful, probably do an awful lot of good, because you get columnists who are just tub thumpers, and they're constantly on, like, they know this rule far better than 99% of GA people, because it's a stick to beat them with. And, like, you know, whatever about aspirations towards a political solution to whatever we have, because it just doesn't work right now, you know, I think that the GA has to be seen as something apart again from that, rather than being dragged into any kind of debates or, you know, you know, at the end of the day, there's only two organisations that organise themselves on a 32-county basis in Ireland, that's Orange Order and the GAA. And, like, you know, there's certain things that we just should let go. And, I mean, that the bigotry or the kind of envy or whatever it is about GAA, like, it is pointless and it's self-defeating for anyone that kind of practices it.
Yeah, that clause certainly seems like a fairly archaic one to still have in there, and it would be a simple clause that would, as you say, just get rid of so much of the easy bashing of the GAA in certain quarters. Mm. It's going to be a conversation, I'm sure, that continues over the next little while. We should talk about the actual football game that's happening this weekend. And I kind of want to throw this open to you. Like, where are you looking, first of all, Enda, when you're trying to come to some sort of conclusion? Like, even if it's your manager's hat on or your analyst's hat on, what's the one area of the pitch this Saturday that you're like, that's the most important area?
In any game, for me, you always start who carries the bigger threat. That's usually your starting go-to, and that's your starting go-to from a point of view, right, who are we trying to shut down here? The problem with this match is you look at, so that'll be one area to start from, and then you're thinking, right, well, where are the main possession sources? Obviously, kickouts is the classic sort of go-to possession source in the modern game, and of course, Tyrone turned that on its head the previous day. Then you're looking, obviously, which defensive setup is more sure, which team has more experience, which team has better changes from the bench in terms of management teams. But every which way you split this game, it feels like a toss of a coin. Like, it is the most difficult game to analyse. You've got so many players that are similar on both sides. You've got a middle eight, and if we throw in the changes that both sides might make to that middle eight, you've got probably 10, 11, 12 players on either side. And literally, if you had them in a bag and just threw them up and see where the chips fell afterwards, well, there's your matchups, because every one of them will would be expected to and will need to, because of the variability of people's positions, be able to pick each other up. But from a Tyrone point of view, looking at Mayo, for me, they're most dangerous men at the minute in terms of the boys having biggest impact of the game is obviously Ryan O'Donoghue. Kevin McLaughlin is just, he is phenomenal, I think, as a player, and his return was massive for them against Dublin. Obviously, Tommy Conroy in the corner forward position, he came out round again in Dublin. He was, his performance went under the radar, and that goes for me. I thought he really was quiet until the latter stages of the Dublin game, where he really caught fire. When I re-watched the game, the work he put in round the middle, the hassle, the damage he caused Dublin in terms of his dispossession, the pressure he was able to apply, and his use of the ball was immense. His running ability is immense. It's every bit of good. Thrown, obviously, we're fawning over Myler at the minute. Tommy Conroy's pace and running ability in that Dublin game was like nothing else. And of course, then he had the ability to come up with the huge scores at the end of the game, which were an only fitting part of what was a phenomenal performance by him. So he'll certainly, Tyrone, having watched that Dublin game, as I'm sure they'll have, will have picked up him as a serious player. And then Matty Ruan, their midfield, Mayo's midfield, probably the biggest difference in terms of forward line or pretty similar, defences pretty similar, midfield for me, Mayo are playing essentially with an out and out midfielder in Matty Ryan, who is essentially like a Sean Kavanagh midfielder. He is an attacking, he is a forward midfielder, and then either Conor Loftus or Dermot, and both of them are forwards, so they have a very much attacking minded midfield, and they do a lot of damage for them, because neither team maybe has out and out star forwards the way maybe other teams had in the past. Obviously Mayo have lost their main man in Killian. Tyrone haven't got their main man, or will he start, will he, won't he start, Cahill McShane. So from that point of view, both teams are maybe shorn of that out and out star forward quality. They've got numerous good forwards, but they haven't that out and out star quality forward, which maybe we're used to analysing, and obviously Kerry had to deal, or Tyrone had to deal with against Kerry, and you could argue struggle to deal with against Kerry. But so really difficult to call, but maybe the key difference and the key one that Tyrone will be looking to cancel out is that attacking midfield platform that Mayo have.
Where will your eyes look first of all on Saturday evening, Declan, in terms of matchups?
I have to say, and his answer was so comprehensive there, that there's very little to add. But no, you know, I'm not trying to be funny there, but you know, with all the kind of variables that anyone might look at, like kickouts, matchups, all these kind of things, and then you're looking at, say, well, okay, right, let's look at kickouts, and the truth is that people would say with raw data, oh, Kerry won all their kickouts. That's because Tyrone left them to kick it short and said, well, you know what? We're not going to worry about David Moore catching it, because we're going to make you come through about 3-4 different tackles before you can even hand pass it to David Moore. And there's a wee bit like what Tyrone were trying to do that in the 2018 final against Dublin too, the Conor Minor mark and Brian Fenton. Now, if Stephen Cluxton kicks that ball long, then Brian Fenton's catching it over Conor Miller. But they left a man free, and Cluxton was always going to take the free option. He's always going to go safe. So you can say that Tyrone, in this regard, if Mayo do an aggressive press, which, you know, they're renowned for and they probably will, then they'll be looking that Matthew Ruan might pick up and Conor Loftus might pick up loads of Niall Morgan's kickouts and then loads of breaks. But like, that's never really bothered Tyrone. This is the thing, even going back to Enda's time, like, you know, they were underrated, that midfield, but at the same time, they weren't the sort of pure catchers that maybe they were coming up against. So I think that you can slice and dice it whatever way you want. Both teams played an All-Ireland semi-final that went to the very ends of extra time. There's 100 minutes of football in each of them. Both teams produced 35 turnovers on the opposition. That just shows you what kind of game it's going to be. It's attritional and hard and running, and there'll be frees given. And there one of the elements I think might say is Mayo are an extremely hard hitting team. Like Kieran McGinney used to always say that they are the hardest hitting team that he ever seen in Gaelic football. And I just feel that maybe if there's a wee sign of petulance out of any Tyrone player, and if they even just, you know, throw their hand back out of frustration, then, you know, sometimes these things can be made a meal of. A red card could enter the equation, and then, you know, the game is up in the air then after that, once it's 14 men down. I just think that Joe McQuillan's going to have a huge, huge day's work. I wouldn't envy it. You wouldn't do it for £1 million, standing in front of all Mayo people and Tyrone people, and you blowing a whistle between them. And I think there's one key element of it, and this might sound wally, and maybe Enda's going to completely dispute it. When Mayo do a turnover, their response to the ones against Dublin was exactly like Donegal had in 2012, that year when, especially playing Cork and then playing Kerry, like they were watching everyone just being drawn in, and next minute then the turnover, and a Carl Lacey might be onto it, and Anthony Thompson might be onto it, and the roar that got up around the stadium that day, every time, and you could see that was giving Donegal huge energy. It gives Mayo enormous energy. And Tyrone fans, if I'm not wrong in saying, and since your time after that, the next generation have been kind of quiet compared to when you were in your prime, like that primal roar and scream and top of your voice stuff. So I think that the Tyrone fans have a role here to play. They need to actually carry and lift their team to the same levels of emotion as Mayo.
I think part of that is the way the game evolved during that time too. Like that, you look back at the noughties football and it looked like kamikaze type stuff, and then it goes into the very, very staged and systematic approach that we had in the noughties with the blanket defences and player, and then Dublin realising how to beat that by playing around the outside of it and keeping the keep possession game, which then teams evolved into, and then you'd stalemate on both sides, and there weren't games that a lot of people could really get into until the likes of Mayo, who still just went through bloody mindedness, went toe to toe with whoever they could play, and then there were amazing games again. I think the game has changed again a wee bit, and you've seen that Tyrone, Kerry, Mayo, Dublin, the semi-finals, it was much more toe-to-toe battle with a lovely balance, because all of them teams still at times had compressed areas where there had a lot of people back in defence, but at lots of times you were sitting in the stand looking out and there was just pairs all over the pitch. Now, certainly not the 6-2-6 formation of we see in our programme. It was just pairs all over the pitch. At one stage, the entire... We talk about seeing at times where all the players of the pitch are within a 45 on one side or in the 45 on the other side. I've seen other times in the game where practically all outfield players were between the two 45s in the middle third. So that's where the game is at the minute. Going back to your... And for me, that's an exciting spectacle. Turnovers, exciting spectacle. Hits, experience, effort, passion, more one-on-one contest, more one-on-one people trying to take somebody else on and somebody else stand them up. That's the excitement people want to see. And so it's very easy for crowds at the minute to get into, and I don't think there'll be an issue in terms of crowd noise. There'll only be, whatever, 41,000 at this match. I don't think it's going to be an issue trying to get the crowd into this one. But absolutely, the role of Joe McQuillan. This game is going to start off, I think, like a, not even like a house on fire. It's going to be like a wildfire. It is going to be a wildfire. It is going to just be shifting all over the pitch. You'll need multiple eyes all over that pitch for the intensity I think both teams are going to bring to it. Decky got me to enter a half marathon here, and it'll be like him setting off from the goal. Like, you know, he's just sprinting. He'll die. He'll die within about 400 metres, but he'll still, that eagerness will be there. So for both teams, there will be a massive pent up adrenaline that will come out. They'll work. They're both experienced in their own ways, and they'll work to calm that down. But absolutely, the ability for Joe to know what is the enthusiasm and the intensity that the players are bringing, and what is over that line and needs reprimanded to get his control on it, is this game that can break out. I don't think it's a game that can break out with huge animosity. I don't think there's that history between the two teams. Now, obviously, if you really let it go, it can always go to that, but I don't think so. So I'm hoping he'll be a wee bit more relaxed and realise this is just two teams that are dying to get up them steps at the end of this game. And so the overzealousness, I would hope he keeps the cards in his pocket for the first while anyway, until he sees how things are going and gives boys the benefit of the doubt that we want to see a physical contest here. And both teams, like, both Mayo prefer toe-to-toe battle. Tyrone, I think, have rediscovered that that's where they're very happy too, toe-to-toe battle. Yeah. If you're going to have that, you have to be mindful of the cards. And then going back, Decky, your point on the kickouts, the interesting thing from a Tyrone point of view was, during our time, We aimed for 50-50. We weren't particularly great in terms of catching. That was the era of long kickouts. If we thought we could break even or even very close to even, we were happy enough, because we were always sure that we would out-tackle and out-turn over the opposition. And so Collie Holmes is there as a key member of that backroom team, and very, very shrewd. He was part of that sort of midfield group of players that we had in around there. And Duher, of course, break ball extraordinaire in there. So, more than confident, if the opposition want to win a few extra kickouts, so be it.
Can I just ask, what are they teaching
or coaching the players, do you think, in training, specifically when it comes to the art of getting away with not winning all your kickouts?
It's more the intensity that they don't set up, and I don't think they set up to let Kerry win their kickouts. They didn't do a very obvious drop off the Kerry kickout. They weren't maybe in a full press. I think part of that mindset was realising the danger that Kerry possessed in the back line, so they took a slightly defensive step back, but it wasn't a full here let you have the kickouts. They wanted to create opportunities, but Kerry were too good and got them away. The biggest killer for Tyrone was that the break ball. And break ball is just your effort and your work rate and your time and your alertness. And that was poor from a Tyrone point of view. And I would imagine Duher and the boys will have very much spoke about that ability to win more break ball, which is about your positioning. And that era slightly changes too, because previously when boys were all making runs for kickouts, everybody's sort of more individual in terms of thinking, is there a wee space that I can move into and go? Whereas when you're sort of break ball and more minded towards break ball, then you're not really thinking of where can I run to for me to win the kick out. You're thinking, where's this ball going and where can I move to that I'm in pole position for that break ball? And it's a different scenario, and it's very difficult for a player to have two things in their head. So maybe Tyrone were still caught in that thing where that was the first time I think we've seen Tyrone really just the majority of their kicks going long out the middle. And I think that's a slight mindset change for the players, that they need to get more into the break. If we are going long in the kickouts, then bar the one or two identified boys that are going aerial for this, everybody else is hunting that break ball. And it's a slight change from the era where everybody is available for kickouts, make your runs, find your space and be hit by Morgan. It's a slight change in that, and maybe that explains some of the numbers that we've seen again Kerry.
Interesting. Before we wrap up, Declan, here's maybe a little bit of a curveball for you. Mayo people seem to think that Owen McLaughlin and Oisín Mullen are good to go. The glass jaw is glass no longer, and Mullen's good to go. Any curveballs from the Tyrone side of things, or even from the Mayo side of things, from what you've heard, or even just a hunch that you might have?
I just feel that it's one of those ones that the team is named. The teams, when do you think they'll name the teams, Andy? I know this is probably
Saturday going. Probably.
Yeah, Saturday morning. This is probably going out on Saturday morning. So we don't know. By some miracle, the teams might have been named, but that's just completely gone out of Gaelic football. All Ireland finals now, is the team is not named. So they may name the team, and I just think that at the 11th hour, it'll be number 23, Cathal McShane, replaces number whatever, and I think that they will see Lee Keegan maybe primed at number 3 for thinking, well, I'm going to go in a marking role with Matthew Donnelly. And all of a sudden, my God, this is a completely different task I've got in front of me. Now, obviously, James Horan will be telling him, look, this might happen. And he'll be totally aware of that. But I just think that, when you hear that late announcement and then you see this boy coming towards you, and, maybe Lee Keegan hasn't marked him before, my God, this guy's actually... He's a couple of inches taller than I even expected him to be. And the next thing, Tyrone might even play the odd high ball in to keep Keegan honest, losing a couple of inches. And given Mayo's history with that early goal thing, especially Michael Murphy on Kevin Keane in 2012, it may be worth a gamble.
Yeah. Prediction time then, Enda. You can lead us off here nicely.
We see, take the easy option.
Draw. I think draw nearly feels like the easy option. To be honest, I was thinking Tyrone, and I'm thinking Tyrone because I just think Tyrone carry a wee bit more forward power than Mayo. And yet, when I sat down and I really done the sort of names on a sheet of paper today, I probably would have cited the more quality in the probable first 15s from an attacking point of view with Mayo. But then I think Tyrone have more change off the bench in terms of attacking power. And if Cathal McShane starts on the bench particularly, and with that I see this game going down to the last 15-20 minutes. Mayo have a stunning bench, but they are middle third power runners, plus Darren Cohen, who would be maybe an out and out finisher there. Tyrone have maybe more people able to affect the scoreboard in that final 15-20 minutes. So for me, I'm still balancing, and how much of this is heart ruling ahead. I really do think that Tyrone can take this. I think for Mayo, finding that perfect edge in terms of their desire to win this game with all the history and everything that they're carrying with them, finding that edge and not overcooking that edge will be difficult. And I think Tyrone will come in again with a savage hunger, but maybe I'm hoping with a wee bit of control. And I think while I was talking that this will be like a wildfire, like two boxers just swinging punches, standing in the middle of the ring and see who's standing. I think the team that is able to maybe step back from that just in moments and exert a wee bit of real quality and control and a bit of game management, I think that's the team that'll maybe get over the line. And for me, it's impossible to call with any security, but I think Tyrone potentially has that ability to play a more controlled game as and when they need it than Mayo.
Right. And we go to national journalist Declan Bogue here for a calculated prediction.
No, listen, I think everyone, and I think that, like, if you asked any Tyrone fan at the start of the year, who would you like to see winning the All-Ireland, they'd have all said Mayo, like, because they wouldn't have saw themselves at this stage. I do believe that. Like, you know, take myself back to November and Mickey Hart stood down, and then Fergal and Brian were interviewed in Gervahi, and, like, it just looked and felt a little bit just... you know, a little bit flat or something like that. Maybe it was, you know, the fact that we were heading into another lockdown and everything was just a bit grim. But, like, you know, Fergal, like, he hadn't been managing counties. He hadn't been managing high-profile club teams. The same goes for Brian. I don't think Brian was ever involved in a senior club setup as a manager, you know, whatever they did with the under-21s. And what they needed then in that first year, if you say that Mayo have been throwing mud at the wall for years and years and years, through Horan's first spell, through Stephen Rochford, through Holmes Kennelly that period, and then back with Horan, and it's just building and building and building. It feels like it's going like a dam busting when they win the All-Ireland. But anyone looking at Tyrone at the start of the year would have said, number one, management have very little experience. Number two, they needed a 3-month pre-season. They needed to be back at Tyrone in October for a January start in the Dr. McKenna Cup. The way things have gone, I don't think we'll ever see the Dr. McKenna Cup ever again either. So they needed the full five games, your 3 group games, semi-final and final and that. They needed 7 league games against teams from all over the country to experience different styles, and then they needed a good championship with a backdoor or super race or something to just get games, learn all about the lads that they had at their disposal, learn their quirks, their foibles, what gets them going, what gets them excited, how you work with them and devise a game plan around them. Instead, they got nothing. Like, they went straight into lockdown, and, like, unlike some counties, Tyrone didn't do a thing. They did not do a thing. Like, you know, I mean, nothing collectively. And then they just start back when they're supposed to, and then they go on to beat Cavan comprehensively. They probably got a wee bit of luck now against Donegal. Michael Murphy's red card, his penalty miss, so on. You know, but this is what happens to teams. Like, sometimes teams just get on a roll of luck. They had a real scare against Monaghan, came out the other side to tell the tale. You know, the most horrendous, like, this is what people fail to recognise about all this COVID cases, like, is when you're in a team, you care deeply about the people that are in the same dressing room as you, well, are not in the same dressing room as things are, like, but standing around outside. You do form bonds and attachments, and you care deeply about them, and you get to know all about their families and their lives and all that. And, like, you know, a lot of that has been forgotten in some of the criticism about Tyrone, like, as if, you know, the phrases that you hear, like, why did they not box this off? Like, as if it was the NBA bubble and these players were living inside, you know, just a self-contained unit. Like, people are still teachers and they're still working in different environments and all the rest. So they had a horrendous time getting over all that. Whatever you feel about levels of vaccination or whatever, that's just another thing. And I feel now that their name's in the cup. And that might sound, you know, that's fairly simplistic and, you know, it's homespun kind of analysis. But it just feels like this is the most unlikely All-Ireland in God knows how many. Like, you can't even say Offaly 82 was unlikely because they were in the final year before. Like, you know, maybe even since maybe Down in 91, just a team coming from literally nowhere. I know, like, how can Tyrone come from literally nowhere? Like, they were in the final 3 years previous. But what I'm talking about is expectation level, trying to move away from Mickey Hart's ingrained type of playing, everything like that. It just feels like it's all coming together. They're getting a wee bit of luck, and maybe they're going to get another tiny bit of it, and can't see them losing that.
make a pretty compelling case. You both do, in fairness. It's going to be an absolute cracker. And as you say, those first 10, 15 minutes are just going to be beautiful chaos on Saturday. Enda McGinley, Declan Bogue, a pleasure, gents, to catch up with you. And thanks a million for having me in Tyrone.
Thank you, Owen.
Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.